Nigel. And I understand this is your last workshop full stop on your programme. So, very exciting. Today we have got all sorts of topics that we're going to be covering. I'm going to be with you for most of the day, but before I join you, Tracy is going to deliver a session for us. She's very kindly agreed to come along. Professor Tracy Howe is a professor in rehabilitation sciences at Glasgow Caledonian University, and she's also the director for Cochrane Global Aging. You all know the Cochrane group? Yep. Good. Please reassure me with nods and heads. That evidence-based library that you kind of search for when it's time to do kind of assignments and things like that. So this is one of the kind of subgroups of Cochrane. So Tracy's got a very kind of interactive presentation, no slides today.
No.
She has got her fingers in all sorts of pies, and she's going to be talking about some of the more kind of international perspectives on long-term conditions and what's happening out there. After Tracy's session, you will have your tea break, and I will join you back in this room at 11 o'clock. So enjoy, and I will see you soon.
Thanks very much.
All right.
Good morning. It's very hot in here. Do we want the door open? I can't open the windows because they're locked. So I don't know whether that's to keep us in or keep people out, but...
Door open?
Yeah, so we'll open the door and
Get
the So, good morning. So, my name's Tracy Howe. I'm a physiotherapist by background. I've been working here at Glasgow Caledonian University for 12 years in different roles. I'm a professor of rehabilitation sciences, but I do lots of things. And it's really interesting that this is your last day here because once upon a time it was my last day. Yeah? And so, potentially, some of the things that I've been involved in since my last day as a student may be things that are in your future. So I'll tell you some of the things that I've been doing and how that all fits in with the context, because you are the future. Okay? So don't see this as the end of something. This is the beginning of something for you. Okay? So I think that's a really important message for today, so it's quite interesting that I've been asked to come along today. I'll just give you a pot of history of my career, and then we'll talk very much about how long-term conditions and things are, the demographics and things like that. Okay, so I've no slides whatsoever. Okay, this is very much, you can ask questions at any point at all. Yeah, if you want to disagree with me, that's fantastic. Let's have a discussion. If you want to tell me a story about how some of these things relate to you or anything like that, fine. Yeah. So we'll just treat it as it is. So you need to do a bit of work as well, rather than just listen to me. And we'll see how things go. And we can go in different directions, because I've got 30 years worth of experience that I can share with you, but we obviously can't do all of that in the space of an hour, so it depends which bits you're interested in, and we can go from there. So I started as a physiotherapist. I worked in the NHS for a while. I don't have a degree because it wasn't a degree program then, so that's the first thing to note, that not having a degree doesn't actually prevent you from getting on and doing things. I do have a master's and a PhD and other qualifications, but I did all of that after I qualified. Okay, so I've got quite a different career route to you guys. So never let anybody tell you that you can't do something. Yeah, and just because it's not a typical route, don't take that as that's all you can do. There's always a way to find a way around something, and if you want to do it, then just go and do it. Yeah. So that's the first message. So if somebody's telling you no, never just take no as the answer. Yeah. So the same thing will apply in practice. So when I first started in practice, I was really renowned for asking questions. And what At one point, one of my senior members of staff said to me, Tracy, if you ask me one more question, I'm going to poke you in the eye with a sharp stick. Okay? So I was always asking questions. So inevitably, I went into doing further education and research. So then I spent a long time doing that. No first degree. I was one of the first, less than 40 physiotherapists in the UK who got a PhD. Okay, so I went from that to that in a really short space of time, and I think I was the fourth professor of physiotherapist as a professor in the UK. So, let's say, career routes, don't think in linear, normal terms. You can make your own career routes up, so please remember that. So, I've done lots and lots of different things. I did my PhD looking at people with arthritis of the knee, okay, so a long-term condition, osteoarthritis, and I did electrical stimulation of the muscles to improve muscle strength and improve function. So that's sort of where I started off, and then I've done all sorts of weird things since then. I have been director of a research centre, I've been assistant dean for research, I've been a director of a research consortium involving 5 universities and the health service, I've been involved in Cochrane for a long time, more than 15 years, and I've had lots of different roles in that. I've done work for NICE, I've done work for SINE, I've been on Department of Health policy committees, I've done lots of international stuff. I've been on committees assessing the research in quality of research in UK universities, in all UK universities. I've assessed quality of education and research in international universities, and lots of things. So it's your last day, but wow, potentially you've got some exciting stuff coming your way, yeah? If you want to do it. So please, please, please do think about, there's lots of options. Don't think of a normal career trajectory, yeah? So, enough about me. Long-term conditions. So, I'm currently Director of Cochrane Global Ageing. You've all heard of Cochrane Collaboration? Well, it's called Cochrane, they've dropped the collaboration bit. And 2 years ago, I was asked to go to the World Health Organization to a consensus event, and they were developing a global action plan for aging and health. Okay, and while I was there, I was thinking, oh, this is really interesting, and Cochrane doesn't have anything that covers that. So I created Cochrane Global Aging. Yeah, so even if things don't exist, you can create them. Yeah. So we created this Cochrane Global Aging, and we launched it at the World Health Organization a year later. The thing about the Global Action Plan for Aging and Health is that the World Health Organization are going to have a decade of healthy aging starting in 2020. Okay, so this will really impact on your working lives and how things develop. So aging and health is going to be a major focus from 2020 to 2030. Okay, so that's quite a significant time within your working career. The reason for that, why are we having a decade of aging, healthy aging?
Demographics
are changing quite significantly. Anybody, any idea about how the demographics are changing? Any concept of what that really means?
That means we have a lot of older people living longer and not necessarily good health.
Okay, potentially, yes. Anything else?
The aging population, especially in the global south or the low and middle income countries,
is increasing rapidly, yes. Yeah. Okay. Why is this? Why is this happening? Do we know?
Baby boom in the 50s.
Sorry?
The baby boom in like
the 40s. The baby boom, yeah, that's one.
Improving tech.
Sorry?
Improving technology and health.
Improving in health and technology, yeah. So people are they're living longer because they're healthier. Anything else? Come on, there's loads and loads of reasons. Medication.
Yeah.
Okay. So improvement in health itself. Interventions.
Some economic drivers, I suppose, in the sense of agricultural communities, especially trying to. Well, I suppose that's more having young people. That's increasing population in general, maybe not necessarily.
Okay. So let's talk about young people. What's happening with young people?
Oh, it's a decreasing number of young people.
Yeah, so we've got a smaller number of younger people because we've got lowering birth rates. Okay. Of those children that are born, more survive and live longer. We've got improvements in healthcare, so people survive for longer with conditions that probably they wouldn't have. We've got antibiotics at the moment that work and things like that. So. Not only have we got more older people than we ever have had before, we've actually got less younger people. Okay, so this is where the burden, if you want to call it burden of the potential older population suddenly starts to become problematic in economic terms, because the need for potential care later in life is expanding, but the number of people who will be around to give that care is decreasing. This is really important for you guys, because I'm at one point of that and you're somewhere here, and you know that's getting worse and worse and worse as we go through. So aging is a really, really important issue for you, and you need to be absolutely aware of the potential implications. And it's one of these things that's been creeping up and people have been aware of, but suddenly it's starting to become really problematic in certain countries. So Japan is number one. That's got the highest proportion of older people in its population. Italy and various other countries are moving along that line. As you rightly said, the lower and middle income countries, people, that never used to be a problem, but that's starting to become a problem now. So huge issues. So there's lots and lots of things about how do we manage this. So a population, if you look at a population diagram, normally it would be a pyramid. Yeah. So you've got lots of younger people at the bottom, and as you go up, you get less and less older people. Yeah. So you're at the top like this. That pyramid is starting to turn upside down, okay? So by 2025, globally, we'll see a flip in the population, okay? So that's really important for you guys, and will have implications in terms of your careers. So it's not all doom and gloom, though, okay? Because people are healthier. So they may be living longer, but we're actually healthier for longer, in the main. So that's why there's these huge pushes for public health initiatives about improving diet, reducing smoking, increasing physical activity, yeah? So because it's really what we're trying to do is keep people as healthy for as long as possible. So it's not really about trying to make people live longer, because we're all going to live longer anyway, on average. It's more about making sure you're as healthy as possible, so you need less input from a care perspective, because we're not going to be able to, one, afford it, and two, there won't be enough people to provide it. Okay, so we need to think quite differently. So, as occupational therapists, you'll be playing significant roles in this, yeah? Because there'll be lots of things about trying to keep people as independent as possible, living in their own environment as long as possible, because there won't be enough facilities for people to go to, and that'd be incredibly costly. Okay, so the idea will be to try and maintain people's independence as much as possible. So you guys are actually going to be quite crucial, Yeah? You're going to play crucial roles in the future. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Okay? So when you get out into that big wide world of employment, fight your corner. This is the sort of message that you can be telling people. Yeah? We're going to play a really important role here. We can do all these things. We can prevent people from needing extended care. We can ensure people can live an independent life. We can ensure people can contribute to society. These are really important issues. So you have to remember that and fight your corner. Don't let anybody tell you anything different. Yeah? Because the people that tell you something different are living in the old system. Yeah? You're going to be living in the new system. And you're going to be creating the new system. Yeah? Because you're all sitting here. Who knows, 5, 10 years' time, you could be directors of services, you could be, you know, commissioners, you could have a £20 million budget, you know. You don't know what the future holds for you. But this is your future for you to create. So this is really, really important stuff about demographics. So last week and the week before, I was at the World Health Organization for 8 days of meetings where we were talking about how do you measure global aging and how do you measure global health. Don't worry, it's not a test, yeah. Because we spent 5 days as a group of 35 invited experts to discuss this and try and come up with some answers to it. So I was within that group, and we didn't quite come up with any answers. We made some steps towards it, but these are big issues for us. How do you say what is healthy aging? Anybody got any ideas? I can take it back to the World Health Organization.
That's it.
Okay, so the World Health Organization, when they produced a global report on aging and health a couple of years ago, and within that they decided to take a completely different approach. So they're looking at health and aging not as a condition. Okay, so we're not talking about the medicalization of it, which has been the traditional approach. People have identified aging with illness, yeah, and inability. So the WHO have decided to flip that around now, and so we're talking more around person-centred approach. Okay, so you will have already been doing that in your programme, I'm guessing. Yeah, looking at person-centred approach. So you're not looking at somebody as a disease. Yeah, you're looking at them as a person, and what can they do? What can they contribute to society in economic terms? In family terms and all of those other things, rather than you've got this problem and we have to sort this problem. Yeah, so it's quite interesting now. So what we're trying to do is to redefine aging not as a health condition, but more as that's part of life. Yeah, and then things that you may have as medical conditions are just an addition to you in your life. So it's quite a different approach. So we're having to think about not defining healthy, because what we're saying is that everybody is aging and that's just what happens. And you have a physiological age, which is what's happening in your body and all the changes that happen to that. And you have a chronological age, which is how old you are in years. But the two might not be the same thing, yeah? So the two people of exactly the same age, their physiological age might be quite different, okay? Because people's bodies are different and the genetic makeup's different. So, but the way society sees age is in chronological terms, yeah? So 65, 67, you know, 60 you get your bus pass, 65 you might be able to retire. I can't retire till I'm 67. No idea when you guys will be able to retire. You know, that's that's how these things are moving. They're just on, you know, one marker. Is that the right marker? We don't know. Because we know that lots of people are still able to contribute to life well into their old age, if you want to call it like that. So, so David Attenborough is a good example. Yeah, so 90, still producing TV programmes, travelling around the world, still got an amazing intellect, able to contribute. Okay. Is he, would you see him as old? Well, the health service would, wouldn't they? Is that right? So these are things we need to think about. Long-term conditions. Okay, so the World Health Organization doesn't call things long-term conditions anymore. Okay, they use the term non-communicable diseases. Okay? So basically, you can't contract it by interacting with people. It's just something that you have, but it's just called a non-communicable disease. Okay? But it means it's something that's longer lasting. Yeah. So that's just different terminology that's used. Anybody give me any examples of non-communicable diseases?
Dementia. So can I ask a question on that?
Yes.
Would something like AIDS be counted as non-communicable? It's a long term, but
it's no, because it's communicable.
Right, okay, so yeah. It's known, so does it still count as a long term condition?
Yeah, it depends how you define it, okay. But it would be a communicable disease.
Okay.
Yeah. MS, yeah? Come on, you how long have you been doing this? 4 years, you could come up with a few, surely. Parkinson's, asthma, arthritis, yeah.
Diabetes,
huge issue, mm-hmm. Big ticking time bomb,
Some mental health conditions.
What's that, sorry?
Mental health conditions.
Mental health conditions, yeah. Do all these things, are they just about older people? No. So it's interesting, isn't it? You think older people have all these conditions, but actually lots of these conditions start off much earlier in life. And that's why people call them long-term conditions, obviously. But it's just a continuation when you get older. It's a continuation of something that you may have been suffering with for quite some time. So it's not that suddenly, at a certain age, you get all these conditions. It doesn't quite work like that, does it? But we've got lots of people who may not have survived some of those conditions. So like rheumatic fever, when people get heart complaints, childhood diabetes, asthma, childhood mental illnesses, but many of those people would never have survived into older age because we didn't have the medical care, the treatments, etc. For that. But now those people are surviving much longer. So we've got a different makeup of our demographics as well. Okay, so you see, you know, people with cerebral palsy, cystic fibrosis. Many of those would never ever have made it into adulthood, but now they're in society and many of them are making valuable contributions. So we have to think quite differently about everything that we do now. Some of you might have seen some of this cardboard stuff. Anybody seen any of this stuff? Anybody seen any of this stuff? Yeah, one or two people. So last year I had a Winston Churchill Fellowship and I went to New York to learn about large-scale health communication projects. And while I was there, I just happened to be introduced to a small charity in New York City, and they make things for children with disability out of corrugated cardboard. Okay, this is a small version of a chair for a child with disability. You can imagine it as a full-size one, and I'm going to pass it round for those people that haven't seen it before, but it's very strong, okay, so you can have a, don't worry, you're not going to damage it. And the thing is about this is you can make it to fit the individual child, okay. What's happening at the moment is you're all different shapes and sizes, would that be fair to say? And what sort of furniture are you sitting on? Identical furniture, yeah? If you had a disability, would that chair potentially be right for you? Has anybody travelled on a long-haul flight? On an aircraft? Yeah? And you all sit in the same seat, and you're in it for a long time, and you're shuffling around because you can't quite get comfortable. Imagine if you had a disability and you had a chair or something you were sitting in that didn't quite fit you, and you're on a long haul flight every day of your life, yeah, in that same seat. It's not really acceptable, is it? So that's where a lot of people with functional limitations find themselves. You're occupational therapists, yeah? So you should be really outraged by this, and you should be fighting to everybody have comfortable seating and functional furniture to enable people to lead as independent a life as possible, and to ensure that they can actually be involved in that process, because quite often people, you get a prescription and you go and get something and it's a standard whatever. Well, the standard whatevers don't really do it for a lot of people. So 75% of aids and appliances that are either prescribed or purchased by people are never actually used. Okay, so remember we talked about there's not going to be enough money to go around. So if 75% of what we're spending on aids and appliances are never used, that can't be right, can it? You guys are going to be responsible for a lot of that spend. No pressure there then. So this project really, with the cardboard, it's just looking at things from a different perspective. What it enables you to do is to customise things to people, to people's needs, and to customise them to their environment. Okay, because what you need in one environment is not what you need in another. So, for example, you're sitting in this sort of chair here, but it's unlikely that you'd be sitting in that at home when you're watching the TV. Yeah, and if you go to the cinema, you'd be sitting in something different. And if you went to a sporting event, you'd be sitting in something different, yeah? If you've got a disability, you're pretty stuffed, really, aren't you? You know, you've got to deal with what you're given, unless you've got your own adaptation that you can take along. Now, most people would have a wheelchair, but wheelchairs tend to come in standard sizes, is that correct? Anybody done seating, wheelchair services? An expert in the room? Tell us all about that. Do they come in standards? Or?
The majority of them do, yeah, unless they're specialists, obviously, for like chair molds and that, for people's body structure. Uh-huh. But certainly, standards wheelchairs for, as you've said, the normal person.
And are they very comfortable to sit in?
No.
No.
Small.
So, could we do things better?
Yeah.
So, you guys are the people that will be doing this, yeah? I'm laying down the challenge to you. You guys are the future. You guys can influence these things. Yeah. So in New York, they're doing this with cardboard. Okay, I'll pass it round. It's future-proof, so as the child grows, you can take out a layer, yeah, so that their feet will touch the floor. You could make the back higher. You could make the arms wider, you could have no arms on it at all. You can do whatever with it, you know, because it's just cardboard. Anyway, have a knock on that and move ahead. The thing is about thinking differently. It's about not thinking about buying things out of a catalogue, and that'll do. It's near enough. It'll do. Your role is about personalised care. Dealing with the person as a whole, not dealing with, okay, this is for somebody with arthritis, off you go. This is for somebody with a stroke, off you go. You've got to think of it differently. Have you all done home visits? You've been out in the community? Anybody been to an identical house? No? Okay, so we've got to think very differently. Things in catalogues, what do they look like? Mass-produced identical pieces. You take that, you put it in your home. Would anybody want any of those things out of catalogue in their own home, by the way? Would you like those things? You know, would they fit in your nicely decorated environments? So why do we think that people would find them acceptable?
Tracy, we did a project the second year. What was a module on inclusive environments, yeah. And it was on this university. And it would actually surprise, maybe not surprise yourself, but it would actually surprise people how difficult it can be for someone with a disability to move around us, certainly even the building for wheelchairs, or like we looked at seating, we looked at the mental library, and we wrote about you know, the table spaces and that for people accessing the wheelchair, and surprise you actually for a university where you're studying like this kind of thing with physiology and all that, how sometimes it can actually be a big barrier to people.
Yeah. It's shocking. Using public transport is the other one.
Yeah.
That's a huge issue. Yeah.
Even to get up to the health building from the main road, you have to come up past Santander, go into the building where the gym is. You go up on a lift in there, come out of the door and then up, and then you have to go up the, you know, and you just think that's just for somebody to access the health building.
It's quite shocking, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the university is changing, obviously, has changed in the last couple of years since we've done that project, but
So, imagine that on a massive scale. Now, okay, we're here with a sort of, you've been studying in the UK, in Scotland. You're sitting here with a UK sort of lens on, because that's what you've experienced in terms of your clinical placements, I'm guessing. Now take yourself out of that to a different country, okay? Let's not go too far away. Let's say we go to somewhere like, I don't know, Serbia, okay? Not too far away. But actually, access there's damn sight harder.
Absolutely, like I'm from Poland, and the health service in Pennsylvania was just shocking. I'm trying to get a hospital for my relative who's just elderly, pale at the time, and undergone a surgery, and the facility was pretty much prepared for him to start getting up and moving about, and with a bit of help, maybe. Washing the rest himself, but no, he was just like really pushed to be washed and bed and all. So the rehabilitation didn't really happen. There was like an hour every second day or so. The equipment was just shocking. Like it looked like a prototype, like from I don't know, like cave times.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So I was just I stood gobsmacked totally. So like, what am I even looking at?
It's shocking, isn't it? So in the UK, we think we're hard done to.
But they have the same sort of access to information and, you know, like news on the world, like, but nothing is changing. Like, there is not a step forward from as far as I'm concerned for the last 50 years.
So this is your role, yeah? This is your role as occupational therapist. You can change the future. Yeah? And actually, you could be very self-centered, because you could say, I'm changing the future for me. Yeah? Because at some point I might be over there. You know, so you could be self-centered and do that, but the thing is, you know, there's lots and lots of things that you can do, but you guys need to have a voice, and you need to, you know, grasp the nettle and fight for these things. And it will be a fight, okay? But it's going to be a fight that's worthwhile. So I just wanted to bring some of this stuff in here just to show you that there are other solutions to things. Don't think just because it's in a catalogue and that's all I'm allowed to order at the moment, but that's what you can do. Try and think creatively, try and influence the system. Yeah, because that you are the future, you are the people. You might end up being, you know, I'm wanting you to be really great because, you know, I might need to receive services from you at some point. Just some other examples made out of cardboard. Okay. So this is just a little lectern-y thing here. So you can put your notebook on or read. Because if you aren't able to move your upper body very much, then looking down at something is quite tricky. So you can make that at whatever height you want. You can put things in it to put your coffee in, or a pencil, or remote control for the TV, or whatever. It's cheap, yeah. It doesn't matter if it gets destroyed.
How much it does cost to make that, do you?
That's made out of stuff out of the bin.
Because I know a smoking board has been covered by pediatric services, like £50 for a plastic smoking board.
Well, do you know what? The industry is making a killing on these things, yeah? Making an absolute killing. We've gone health and safety crazy. Everything has to go through amazing things, which just adds to the price of it. We've got infection control that's all needed and all this sort of stuff. But in the future, we might be able to afford all this stuff. I'm just giving you some suggestions about what the future might hold.
Scandinavia is not too bad with all that because they recycled everything. Actually buying stuff to recycle from other countries as well, and also, and they're quite creative in the way, and their sort of approach to it, I think, and all is quite okay, and they create like playgrounds and like an environment for people to actually go and do stuff out of wood. There's nothing fancy really in it. Logs serve as weights for like lifting and just like.
And so why don't we do more of that?
Because of that, okay. And
so, I think cardboard's aids good for health and safety, given the risk of radiation as well.
So in the UK, legislation is such that I'm currently going to see it being used there. That's great.
That's great.
Was it better? Did it work?
Yeah.
Okay. So. I'm trying to introduce this concept into the UK. It's a huge, huge wrangle, okay? If I wanted an easy life, I wouldn't bother. But as you can see, I'm not that sort of person. So I'm wrestling with health and safety, British standards, trading standards, insurance, whatever, to try and introduce this, effectively introduce it back in to the UK. Because before we had all these fancy catalogues and things, you had to get on and make things. When I was a student, we faffing things around with bits of tape and whatever, because you couldn't buy any of these fancy, schmancy things. So you had to make things. But now we've sort of gone completely the opposite direction, and everybody's like risk averse to doing anything. So I'm trying to bring this into the UK as a concept. I reckon if I can get it through the UK, then I can introduce it everywhere in the world. Yeah, so that's my plan. It's a global plan. This is not just about introducing it into Glasgow. I want to introduce it globally so that people who actually are in most need can access these things, and people like you are aware that you can do things with cardboard. Yeah. So I've been talking to the World Health Organization about it. They're very supportive of it because the World Health Organization just doesn't think in a UK perspective. It has lots of other countries that it deals with. So so it's an ideal opportunity.
So say as an OT, I would come up with, like, this would be ideal for my client to you should ask, you know, like, how do I work all the regulations and standards?
I'm doing that.
So that's still,
I'm trying to do that on everybody's behalf.
So until it's actually approved and standardized, I can actually fold up a cardboard and put that in front of a patient.
At the moment, I'm hoping that in a year's time, that I'll have overcome all of those issues. Okay. Anybody who wants to help, more than welcome. Because at the moment it's me. Anybody wants to help and support this, then, you know, please get in touch with me, because I'm going to be here, and you know, you can see what's happening. But it's going to be about it's almost like we need a movement to take this forward. Yeah. And a movement has to start with somebody. Okay. So here we go. It's a bit like this, you know, that started with me as well. So it, you know, everything's possible if you want to go for it. Yes.
I just have a quick question. Do you have any progress with that?
With this?
I'm trying to
get all this tested. So we're gonna make some standard pieces now. But bear in mind, I'm have to backtrack now. So what I said to you before was, all these pieces are custom made. Yeah, they're custom made for the person, but they're not made for the person, they're made with the person. Yeah. So it's co-produced. So the concept is person-centered. They are part of the production team and the design team. Because they know what their needs are, they know what they would like, they know what they want it to look like, feel like, yeah. I noticed some of you have got Apple products. Yeah, my son has Martin's worships at the Church of Apple, and he's all the time feeling his, you know, phone and whatever, because it's got that aesthetic thing about it. It's not just a computer or a phone, there's more to it than that. So, you know, some people just want functionality, other people want things to look and feel nice, yeah? And so why shouldn't you have things that look and feel nice if that's what you want? So the person needs to be involved in that production as well, because otherwise we end up in the same situation where it's chucked out again, you know. Yeah, we've spent all this time and effort doing this, and then actually that's crap. I don't like the colour of it or whatever.
So see the charity in New York.
Yes.
Are they issuing this equipment in New York, like OTs and things like that?
Yes. So they've been doing that for 15 years in New York City. For children with disabilities.
So are you going to kind of try and propose that idea? What was working over there? So why can't we try and introduce it over here?
Yeah, but the UK doesn't work quite like that. I have to go through lots of regulations and things. If we'd been doing it already for 15 years, that would be a different story, because you would have a history. But trying to introduce something new, that's really hard. You'll find that when you go out into work. Introducing something new, because people like the old thing. But we've always done it this way.
I worked in a dementia assessment ward over the south side, and it was a new Scottish initiative. This dementia friends and ward was to be set up for, like, new admissions coming in and that. And I was a recreational aide on the ward, and it was obviously new. Yeah. So the barriers that I faced in trying to deliver my therapy within that environment were unbelievable. Even down to the smallest of things, when doing like calm stimulation therapy, doing different massage, different therapeutic relaxation techniques to also bring somebody's anxiety level down, different things like that. Everything was scrutinised, even to the pictures on the walls that I had up for signage, and it was just a continuous battle with infection control and that. I had to keep getting infection control coming around to see about my sensory boxes, different things like that. So I know where you're at with that. Like, I can understand.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
But
it just actually put a barrier on the actual the job that I was able to do.
And what happens? Most people.
Well, I left.
Yeah.
That's what
so most people give up.
All
right.
I gave up eventually.
Most people give up, but I'm a bit of a dog with a bone.
Yeah.
You know, you just gotta keep going. You just gotta keep going. But it's nice to have a few people around you to.
I think if I was in that situation now with my occupational therapy experience and doing this degree, I would be in a different place to. But at the time, I didn't have the experience. I had training, but I didn't have the experience I've got now. To be able to work against these people and actually fully advocate for the reason and looking at evidence-based practice and all that for it. I wasn't really privy to that before, whereas now I would sit a lot better with that to say
that's
no, I want this.
That's a nice story, isn't it? That's so you'd feel empowered now.
Yeah, but I didn't at the time feel
that. And then that's fantastic. So your training will have paid off, yeah, because you'll be able to go and fight those battles now. And that's pretty much where we're at with this. You know, you've got to fight the battles.
Is there any resistance from, say, private interests, i.e. companies that contract and so on?
So, typically what happens is it's one size fits all, yeah? So that you mass produce it at reduced cost. That's pretty much how it works from a business model. They're not that interested in doing the customised stuff.
Right.
The people that are interested in the customised stuff are doing it with a huge bill at the end of it. Yeah, so there's thousands of pounds if you go. My mother-in-law had a stroke last year, and we went and got her, you know, special seat that reclines and all this sort of stuff. £1,000, you know. Who can afford that? You know, and is that the right one for her? And you know, all the bits that go with it. And what if not comfortable in it? Is that £1,000? But it's because they do customised stuff that they rocket the price up. So actually, doing stuff with a bit of cardboard that you've got out of the bin, they're not going to be interested in that. Okay, they'll be interested in trying to prevent you from doing it, of course. Yeah.
And any lobbyists trying to.
So that's why there's all this legislation, please. So legislation actually perpetuates that cycle. So it's really about producing customised or personalised, you could call it personalised products, co-producing with the person to fit their needs, their likes, their wants in the environment that they're in. So bear in mind, you know, you move environment, this might no longer be required, or you might need something different, and the same with seating and whatever you have. You worked in wheelchair services, so when they did the special seating, how long did that take?
When people had to keep coming back for appointments.
So on average, it takes 6 months. Okay. So imagine you're sitting on this long haul flight for 6 months while you wait for your special seat to arrive. It's not really acceptable, is it? And if you're a child, what's happened to you during that 6 months? You've grown. You need to have changed your, you know, your whole development is different. So, is that acceptable? Okay. So what I'm suggesting to you is that there may well be alternative methods of dealing with those things, even if the, you know, cardboard or whatever is a temporary solution until somebody gets their special seat. Or whatever it is, even if you see it as a temporary solution, and that's sort of how I'm selling it at the moment, not selling it but selling the message, that because then it doesn't conflict with current contractors in the health service and whatever, so you can see it as a temporary solution, a prototype, whatever, you can experiment with it, you can. If suddenly you just move cities and you no longer wanted to see Glasgow, you paint over it and put something else on it. So it can change. You can modify it. I no longer drank coffee now, so I can just fill that hole in. I can just put another piece of cardboard in there and just fill it in, and put something else in. If I want to make it a bit bigger, I can just glue something on the side of it. Obviously there's engineering required, so you'd need a team of people to help with it. I'm not suggesting you can all go out and make all these things, but it's about teamwork. So you need the person, the family, you need knowledge of their environment, you need the health professional, whatever input that is, designer, people who can make things from an engineer and make it safe. But that's the sort of model that we're working to. But there are loads of these people around. Yeah. So I'm trying to create a global community of all those people. If anybody wants to join in, more than welcome. There's room for everybody. So that's that there. And does anybody know these guys, Erskine? Yeah, so it's a charity care home for veterans in Scotland. And I went out to visit them and talk about how we might involve the residents in creating things for their needs. So talked to the physio team and various other people there. And one of their things that they have problem with is that the residents often have tablets of some nature, smart phones, tablets, iPads, etc. But they can't hold it and use it at the same time. So this is just a prototype solution to that. So it's an iPad holder. It's put out there. The iPad just slides in. You can keep it charged at the same time. But it holds it in place and you can maneuver it. So that could just sit on a table there, but equally it might need to be at a different angle for the person, so you can modify it. Yeah. It may be that in their wheelchair that they it needs attaching to the arm of the wheelchair, or the chair they sit in, or their bed, or whatever. Cardboard allows you to do that, so it's just another thing there, and I just branded it up to do that. But if you were in not just dementia, but dementia is an example, as you've already mentioned it, it may be that you have photographs of your family on it, or whatever, or your cat, or whatever it is. So the thing with this, it's about taking all of that into account, and then using your skills as occupational therapists and applying it for a personalised approach rather than a long-term condition. Like, oh, we're dealing with diabetes, we need to do this, or, oh, we're dealing with somebody with asthma. No, you're dealing with a person who has needs. Yeah? Is that okay? That's about time up for me. I'm not quite sure whether that was what you were expecting to do. We talked about long-term conditions, but not really, in a different context. So we've switched it round away from a long-term condition approach to more a person-centred approach. Anybody got any questions, comments? Yes?
When I imagine a lot of people think about it, because we've got assessment coming up, and it's on international perspectives on dementia type work. We've been asked to compare and contrast UK and international perspectives. Just wonder if you have any insight into that, at least to start with.
Yeah, dementia is quite an interesting concept because it's suddenly become very prevalent, and there are different, different international approaches to it. The UK, I would say, it's got a very good model for dementia care. Well, go to other countries and it's non-existent. And I would guess even things like diagnosis is different. So there's probably not even awareness in the same way that we have it. I mean, we're very aware of that in the UK. But in many countries, it's not even probably recognised as a condition, I would imagine. clearly WHO recognises it as a condition, but in a country-specific area. So I can't give you any specifics, not my particular area. Stirling University have a big dementia unit.
DRC.
So they'd probably be a good port of call for that. Cochrane has a dementia and cognitive improvement review group that have a whole raft of things with that. They're based at University of Oxford, so my co-director is part of that group.
I just wonder as well, with the change of focus towards community care, and I think there's a bit of a move towards prevention as well, but I haven't looked too deeply into that. So what the evidence base is like behind that? Is it actually strong, or are we just sort of going, it's a necessity to move into the community and we're hoping for the best here, or do we actually have proof that that's going to work?
So if you ask people, most people would rather stay at home than go to hospital. So in terms of preference, I'm not saying everybody would, but in general, most people would want to stay at home with their family as long as possible. From an economic perspective, hospitals are getting smaller, they're becoming more acute, more and more acute, but you almost discharged before you've been admitted. It's a completely different model now that we're working on, and it's much more about pushing things back out into the community to deal with. There is some evidence for that, but I think there's a bigger economic driver. That's my first one.
It's one that kind of share from reading around. It doesn't seem to be an awful lot. Being taught a lot about it, and then we actually see it does seem to be more, here's the economic reality, and we're going to do that, and we're going to try and fit the evidence around it, more or less.
And that's why there's now more preventative measures in place, and all these big public health campaigns about, you know, getting out, doing more exercise, doing, you know, eating less, doing whatever. Because suddenly people have realised that the lifestyles people have had causing all these other issues later in life.
Again, not even really on the dementia basis for preventive.
Well, we don't. There's also issues around what sort of dementia and
the vascular risk.
Any other? I'm now the barrier between you and coffee break. So, anything anybody else wants to? Mention. All that's left for me to say is good luck with your future. I expect to see you in the literature and driving policy and things. Yeah, that's your role. I'm charging you with that task. It is possible. Yeah. Please remember that I was once sitting like you are. Anything is possible if you want to go for it. But you do need to find people who can help you and support you. That's really important too. Yeah. And if anybody wants to join forces with the adaptive design, then please do get in touch. I'm based here, GCU, and you can also find me through Cochrane Global Aging. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.